Welcome to the Mental Mastery Golf Podcast by mentalmastery.com.au, the show dedicated to fun mental performance strategies for your golf game. Join mental performance coach Jamie Glazier and co-host Ross Flanagan as they discuss how to manage your mind in one of the craziest sports there is. Jamie Glazier, up there on the Gold Coast, welcome back to the Mental Mastery Golf Podcast. How are you, sir? You well?
Very well, thanks, Roscoe. It's been a little while since I've heard that intro, so yeah, it's good to be back.
I think a few people have been missing the podcasts. It's been, as you said, it's been a while, but with good reason, because you've been very busy. We've both been very busy, but you've been probably since the last podcast that we did with Keely, to overseas two times, just back on during the week from another camp with your clients overseas. So, you know, we should catch up, debrief a little bit about what's going on in the world of the mental master himself. And I think we can maybe, coming into club championship seasons, I know definitely here in Victoria, there'll be a few people that are listening, part of the Mental Mastery Clubhouse, that are preparing for their own elite level performances. And we should give them a little bit of maybe a head start on the rest of the competition by helping them, you know, get set mentally for the task ahead. So, yeah, we'll talk about a few things today, but let's talk about your trip overseas first, mate. It's been a hectic schedule, as we discussed. How has it been? Where were you? Who were you with? And, you know, just give us that little fly on the wall insider into what happens when you go overseas with your clients.
Yeah, look, it's I think as most listeners know, it's been a hectic year of travel for me. I think that's... It's close to 6 months of the year I've spent overseas, so it's been pretty hectic travel-wise, and Jackie, my wife, hasn't traveled with me once this year, so it's been a lot of time spent apart. So what I try to typically do in those trips is condense it as much as I physically and, you know, as I can, and which generally means I don't have a day off. I might have one day off or 1.5 days off for the time I'm away. So it was just under 4 weeks this trip. So started, went straight to Vegas, spent a few days with Matty Snyder for both Herbie and Ryan Ruffles came into town. Ruffles in the desert anyway, doing a bit of practice in preparation for Q School. And Herbie was in town preparing for Shriners. So Ruff ended up trying to Monday qualify for Shriners, seeing he was going to be in the desert anyway, which he actually did. Monday qualified for the Shriners Open. And so that was great to be able to spend a week with them, seeing them compete on the PGA Tour. So that was a really big a big learning curve, just seeing how they're performing and how they're going in that environment, the both of them. And yeah, and then spent the next sort of 10 days in Orlando with a couple of clients, three clients there, Ruff, Charles Hunsinger and JD, who we've had on the podcast, preparing for second stage Q School, which finished up this morning. So, yeah, it was a busy sort of 3.5 weeks, but everyone is, you know, progressing nicely, but, you know, professional golf is very challenging and, yeah, kicking the boys in the guts every now and then. So, it's been a fun trip.
Can we rewind back to Ruff there? So Monday Q for the Shriners and then makes a field. Probably been a little while in between drinks for Ruff, being, you know, playing on a big PGA Tour event. You know, did you notice anything change for him? You know, did he have any elevated levels of aspirations or anxiety, or, you know, what was happening once he made the number and knew he was in the field playing in a reasonable quality field at the Shriners? Obviously, you know, what was his demeanor going into that?
Yeah, he was he's done a lot of really great work this year on all parts of his game, and he and his coach Justin Poynter have his game's really sharp at the minute, and he felt really comfortable Tuesday, Wednesday, felt confident in his game. But then, you know, Thursday morning before the gun goes off, he hasn't been in that situation in a little while and got the better of him on day one, got a little bit quick with things, and we all debriefed it in the afternoon, then went out the next day and played really, really nice golf. Missed the cut, but he's like, yep, you know, this is where I, you know, I know I'm, I belong. And, you know, just because someone's a good enough player to play at that level, getting the opportunities generally sort of some of the harder things.
It's an interesting point, and it sort of relates to, you know, this chat that we might help unpack club championship preparedness. And you had a couple of examples of, you know, your team not having great rounds and then going out the next day and going way, way under. You know, like that happens to every golfer. You know, and I think every club level golfer expects that it doesn't happen to clients like yours, but it does. You know, take us through what's happening with the guys when they haven't had a great round and then they come and shoot. You know, I think you had a couple of examples there before, outside of the rough example.
Yeah, look, there's JD, first stage of tour school about a month or so ago, just before I left. Yeah, he was he's been playing nicely as well, been doing a lot of good work with his coach, and his game's starting to feel really sharp, and he feels like he's got a lot of competence. And through three rounds, he was sitting inside the number, so probably top 8, top 10, I think top 15, advanced through to second stage. He was, you know, a couple of shots inside the number, playing nicely, and rings, and we have a discussion, and he was just, there was so much performance anxiety, worry, doubt, concern about whether he can stand up and hold up and play good golf tomorrow and get through to second stage, which he hasn't done as yet. So we were having a discussion, and obviously a lot of fear of failure kicks in with a lot of players in those situations, whether it be at a professional level or at a club level. You know, the first round of the club champs, the fear of failure is so high, then they might go out and shoot 86 and shoot themselves out of the tournament. Now there's no fear of failure because they've already failed. So then they play with freedom the next week and then, you know, give themselves a great opportunity to get themselves back in the tournament, or they just play a really nice round of golf. So on this phone call with JD, you know, we got to a point where I said, look, mate, you know, there's two things that are going to happen. One is you're not going to step into the player you think you are. You know, you're just not going to perform that well, and you're not going to advance. That's one reality. But the other reality is that you will find a way to have the confidence in yourself to focus on what you need to do and focus on your strengths and the things that you're good at under that pressure environment, and you will step into performing well. So, you know, that's something that you will have to sort of decide on and actually step into in the moment. And it was pretty interesting to see what happened the next day. You know, 3 under through the front nine and doing really nicely. And then he just said he felt this sense of calm. Proceeded to shoot 6 under the back nine, 9 under for the day, and finish, you know, third. So once we sort of diffuse that little bit of fear of failure, that worry about that negative outcome, but also help the player attach to a focus point. What is it that I'm going to focus on right now that's going to help give me the best opportunity to perform well? Once they have that focus point, then at least they've got something to cling to during the round. And I think that's, you know, thinking back about my club championship experience when I used to play before I started the business, it was all around elevating this event to mean more and be more than a typical round of golf. And that only, you know, heightened the anxiety, the pressure, the worry, the fear. But I never really had a focus point. So when we sort of perform in environments where there is that pressure, that worry, that concern, that fear, which are all normal, as long as we've got a focus point to come back to that can help us to perform, then generally we're going to be able to do pretty well.
So for all of the members of the Mental Mastery Clubhouse, where they get access to, you know, the video content and training, and thank you for everyone who is a member, and hopefully you continue to access that, because it's evergreen. It doesn't go away, and you can refer to it and get reminded of, you know, the simple processes involved in becoming a better version of yourself as a golfer. You know, what would be a snapshot of someone preparing for a club championship? You know, like the lead up, get to the club. You know, what's a little bit of a roadmap that they might look for, you know, getting the best level of success?
I think the one of the common things to be aware of is, again, that build-up of anticipation, that build-up of excitement. In a normal Saturday comp, most people may not think about that competition day until the day before, you know, that Saturday comp round. But with the club champs, they typically might start to think about that 3, 4, 5 days before, maybe even a few weeks before. So what actually happens is they're giving themselves more opportunity to create even more stress, excitement, nerves, fear, worry, all of the fun stuff. It gives them more time to build up and become bigger than what it is. So, you know, there's, I'll call them distraction techniques, but there's just, you know, ways for people to be aware of, okay, you know, I'm starting to think about the club champs is 2 weeks away. You know, there's two ways to think about it. You can go down the pathway of thinking about the worry, the fear, or there is an opportunity if you want to think about it, because sometimes it's difficult to just stop those thoughts because it is a big moment. I can't just say don't think about it, because something that means so much to golfers and is an important thing in their yearly calendar, it's just normal that they're going to want to think about it. Just start to direct your thoughts around what it is you've got control over, what it is, you know, what are your focus points, what's the training and practice going to look like over the next 10 days? Is there a little bit more short game practice? Is there a little bit more putting inside 5 feet practice? Like, start to put together a little bit of a plan of what you think your game needs to sharpen in preparation to be ready when the gun goes off.
It's an interesting point. And as soon as you said that, I have a flashback to a number of examples of, you know, people who might come in and practice at the Big Swing golf venue, and, you know, you start to see them more often, and it's like, oh, you know, catching up with you again. G'day, how are you going? Oh, yeah, I've got the clubbies, or I've got some important event. And all of a sudden, the elevation, the amount of balls being slammed into the screen and the frustration, it just goes like that. And it just may make me think of those examples. I see people putting themselves under a lot of pressure. Just
that
probably if they went about it in a better, more productive way and had a different outlook towards it, might get a better outcome. I don't know. But I just see that type of behavior. It just came out as you said it.
Because it's not the actual increase in practice that's the issue. It's the practice being driven from panic versus the practice being driven from having a clear plan and a clear intention to build some solid foundations of competence in readiness for that first round.
Yeah.
You know, and in the Art of Confidence, the course inside the Mental Mastery Clubhouse, we do talk a lot about competence versus confidence. You know, we all want to feel confident, but that can be this fluffy state that we try to access by positive self-talk. And, you know, we often know that doesn't work very well. So as long as that increase in preparation, increase in practice, there is a clear plan and a clear intention for what you're trying to do in readiness for that first round.
Okay, so we've got ourselves ready for, we've put in the work and we've tuned up and we've worked on the parts of the game that we need to, and we feel competent and confident that we're ready to go. Yep. What about the night before, the day before? Where's our head at there?
Well, I think it's our head should be just allowing the excitement, allowing the, you know, there's going to be a little bit of worry, a bit of fear, but it's just about trying to accept those thoughts are natural and normal, allow them to be there, but don't allow them to take you on this pathway of amplifying the worry even further. Once you recognize that your mind is starting to think about that the night or two, just again, bring it back to, all right, what am I going to commit to on Saturday? What's my focus point going to be? What am I going to really cling on to during that round of golf? And just continue to have a clear understanding of what it is you're going to try and commit to while you're out there during that first round. And then trying to warm that up in your practice session prior on the range, warming up, you know, play the first 3 to 6 holes of the range while stepping into those focus points so that you can feel like, okay, yep, I know what I'm going to attach to on the first tee when there is those little bit of nerves or worry or excitement. I've just spent the last 5 minutes of my range session tapping into that focus point and I'm ready to go.
Okay. So not wanting to, you know, look at a negative outcome, but it happens a bit and I hear the stories of it happening, how people just wipe themselves off round one. That's it. I'm done. You know, next year, blah, blah, blah. You know, what happens when you get off to not the greatest start, whether that's first tee, first hole, and that can happen, or whether it's that first 9 or first 18, you know, what are some of the things that we can do, you know, mid-round that just help us refocus, reset?
I think, you know, not panicking is, you know, a really good start. And what I mean by that is, again, not building the day or the event up to be bigger than what it might be. Yes, it's a club championship, but I'm sure it's probably not your first club championship, and I'm pretty sure it won't be your last. but just making sure when we're in that sort of round of maybe not getting off to the greatest of starts, just trying to bring your attention back to the moment as much as you can, break things down into smaller sort of bite-sized chunks, try and make, you know, two pars in a row, for example, just trying to bring things back down into the present moment and manage your expectations as well. You know, you might say, okay, I might try and play the next three holes or six holes, you know, six holes in two over par, for example. So just trying to keep your mind a little bit more focused on short term, present moment, but still giving yourself a little bit of room to breathe.
I'm going to tell you a story. It relates to changing behaviors or changing things in the middle of an event, in the middle of the a tournament, in this example, club championships. And I'm not sure if it relates to, or if you've got a story around it, but it's a personal story. It was the last time that I ever played in, I don't think I've ever played in the club championships at PK in my time there, because I've always been working on weekends and it just didn't fit. But certainly at my time at Mornington, I played in the club championships and I made it to the last four, which was pretty good. You know, I was pretty happy with that outcome. You know, it was three rounds of stroke and then four rounds of stroke. They don't have a match play set up. So it was four rounds of stroke. And then the last round of stroke, the last four play in a group. So I had played the first three rounds of stroke using this golf ball, which I can't remember the name of. I don't even think the type of golf ball exists anymore. And it certainly wasn't one that you walk into a pro shop and buy. It certainly wasn't one that you would see on a tour. And I think I had some printed for my wife's barbershop or something like that. You know, it was a new ball and someone was repping it in Australia. This is before I was in the industry. And they sent me some. They said, use these. These are great. They won't die at the hole like a, you know, Brand X. Oh, okay, yeah, no worries. And I played three of the best rounds of my life. Maybe not three of the best rounds of my life, but they were best around well enough to get into the final four. Low 70s, mid 70s, low 70s. Fantastic. Oh, I'm in the final four. Fantastic. That's an achievement. I remember showing Michael Ferroni this golf ball after round one, and he just basically laughed at me. He said, that's not even a golf ball, mate. What are you doing playing with that? I get to the last four, and I'm going, oh, my goodness. I've now got to play with a proper golf ball. And it just fell to pieces. Now, I'm not blaming the golf ball, but something happened in that whole scenario. And the thing that changed for me was this golf ball. And I better actually go and play with this proper tour-level golf ball now, because that's what – it was just such a – hopefully people are sitting back laughing at me. But, anyway.
Well, I think that's the really important lesson in all of this is when we get to elevated events or bigger situations, we pretend or perceive that we have to do more or be more in those moments when we don't. We just have to try and peel it back to just being us, just being okay with, you know, I won't say mediocrity, but we don't have to do anything special. And, again, it becomes evident all the time, like these tour schools today, second stage finished and, you know, everyone's been shooting five or six under par and, so, you know, one round to go, people think, okay, well, I need to shoot six to get inside the number. And then in reality, once it's all said and done, if I had a shot two or three, that would have been good enough. Because the bigger the moment, typically people try and do more than, and then they don't perform as well. So if we stay within ourselves and just perform within yourself, and I think that's the big message here with Club Champs is, even though it's an elevated event, just play within yourself. Don't try to do more than what you normally do. Just try and be your normal, consistent self. And that is typically when you start to find some consistency and performance in these bigger events or elevated events, so to speak. It's not about playing out of your shoelaces to win. It's about just playing within yourself, but doing it consistently over the club champ.
I think that's enough information for those that listen that want to get better prepared for their club championships. Of course, if they want more, they can join the Mental Mastery Clubhouse for $200. You can get access to deep dive conversations like this with Jamie on video. You really should set that up for yourself, because it's not with the cost of a golf lesson. You know, you can get access to this type of material. Jamie, when you reflect back on the, you know, these guys qualifying, you know, like, it's a tough game, professional golf, and out of left field, you see some unbelievable scores. Did anyone stand out? Is there anyone that we should be watching? Is there anything that happened out there that everyone just went, wow, we didn't see that coming?
Look, I had a client this morning, Charles Hunsinger from Atlanta, who I'd spent some time with in Orlando last week preparing for this. Charles has been playing really nicely. The first stage, he finished second. JD finished third. So he's been playing really nicely. Starts this week at second stage, shoots 5 under. Again, just keeping on that trend of what he's been on. Shot even par the second day, was a little bit untidy, but nothing. He's like, you know, that's okay. I'll clean it up. Shot 3 over the third round and basically just shot himself out of the tournament because I think the number was around 10 under at that point and probably was going to go to 13 to 15 under. So he was at 2 under through three rounds. So speaking with him last night, messaging with him, he's like, oh, you know, I need a beer. So he went and had one of the worst margaritas he ended up having in his life. He said he had that basically had, when I say had given up, he not given up, but he knew the chances of him progressing are slim to none. And today went out and shot 10 under par and missed by one shot. So all I got from him this morning was a message saying hashtag pain, you know, which 24 hours ago there was pain on that side. And then today there's pain again. It's just the part of the journey of professional golf. You know, we see these guys playing on the PGA Tour and winning lots of money and they seem to live this glamorous lifestyle, but it's not at all. You know, if you're a fly on the wall with Herbie in Vegas, you know, he's up getting treatment at 5:30 in the morning and then he'll go to the pro-am and play and then he's back on the range practicing and then he might, you know, go out and have dinner, but 30 minutes into dinner he's falling asleep at the table and he's back in his hotel room and that's, you know, 6 days in a row on tour. It's not easy.
I saw that at the Open. You know, if you've got an early tea time, you know, your day starts well into the dark hours of the o'clock, and especially as you say, you know, these guys have access to all of the body manipulation, the gyms, and you know, they're all in there, they're all getting manipulated, they're all getting, you know, that pre-workout. So if you've got a 7:30 a.m. start, you know, it's not rock up to the car park and whip the clubs out and off you go. It's they're putting in the hours. So
And I think too, and I've had this discussion, you know, many times through the years when I might give a presentation at a golf club and they're like, they look so confident. I just want to mentally be like them. And I'm like, that's that journey that they've taken to get to that point of being able to walk tall, you know, head up, shoulders back and do it with conviction is because they've hit a gazillion golf balls. They've gone through their you know, exercise program. They've been stretching or Pilates or, you know, having 3 massages, 5 massages a week, a massage every day. Like there's been that much work beneath the surface and you know, on the foundational level that gives them that confidence and that ability to walk and think that way and feel that way. But, you know, for club level golfers, they're like, well, I want to feel that way, but they're not willing to put the foundation of work in to get there. And, you know, all I'd say to people is, hey, like, don't kid yourself. Firstly, if you want to start to perform well, put a really clear plan in of what you need to develop, whether it be technically, physically, and mentally, and just lay those foundations. And then in 6, 12 months, 24 months' time, you'll be able to get to the point of probably being the best golfer you've been and also accessing a state mentally or emotionally that you probably haven't been able to access. But there's a lot of, you can't just click your fingers and take a pill and get there tomorrow. There's a lot of work that he's been put in place. So, but again, club level golfers like us, Roscoe, we're working 9 to 5, maybe, you know, 8 to 8 or whatever it might be. We may not have the time to put all of that work in. So that's where the managing of expectations becomes very important.
Mate, before we wrap it up, We need to talk about Lucas. He's back in town. He's let everyone know that he's back home in Bendigo and he's catching up with some family and doing all that sort of stuff. What does Herbie's schedule look like for the summer of golf here in Australia and how pumped is he for it?
Oh, he's extremely excited to play both the PGA and the Aussie Open. You know, I think they're going to be 2 fabulous events this year with the calibre of player that's coming back and playing in those. But also I think the caliber for both Golf Australia and the PGA of Australia to have these big events back on the schedule, I think they're going to be putting in a hell of a lot of work to make sure those events are super events. And so he's back for a couple of weeks. He heads to South Africa on the DP World Tour, their last event. He's trying to then qualify inside the top, I think it's top 60 on the European money list to get into Dubai. So he's going to try and do that. I don't know where he is currently on that money list, but I don't think he's too far out. Good week in South Africa will get him into Dubai.
Interesting on that. So, you know, there's a lot of talk about DP World Tour, obviously. He's committed to this DP World Tour journey. You know, what's his thinking behind that, because he could quite easily just not worry about that. But, you know, he wants to get into that level, to the final stage of the DP World Tour. What's his thinking there?
Yeah, look, I think he just loves Dubai. He loves that event, that season, sort of that final event of the season. He loves it. So I think he's just like, well, you know, I'm home. I'll play South Africa. I like that course. I like visiting South Africa. And if I can play well and find myself inside, the number to get into Dubai, then he loves Dubai as well. So he's 57th. At the moment, and it's top 60, but he will fall out of that over the next few weeks because he's not playing in the events. So yeah, he just loves that and loves playing in Europe. So he's wanting to try and keep both tour cards, you know, while he can, and also just good to sharpen the tools in preparation for the PGA and Aussie Open as well. So he'll have, I think, a week back home prior to the PGA after Dubai, I think. I'm not 100% sure when that event is, but
It's good to see him supporting, you know, still supporting that DP World Tour, you know, and I wouldn't say they need all the support they get, but I think you know what I mean. Like they need that profile, and to see Lucas continue to go back there is a really good thing, I think, for him and for Aussie golf. And it's really good.
I think it looks like from a schedule point of view, he's got a Nedbank straight into DP World, the Tour Championship, if he does make it, which will then go straight into the PGA and Oz Open. So he may have 4 weeks in a row if South Africa goes well. So, going to be a busy time of year for him, and then time at home.
Will you get 20 of that? Will you have any requirements to be on board there?
I'll be at the PGA and Oz Open. I'll be at both of those events with him, and possibly the clients that might be in the field. But we'll definitely be there with Herbie at both of those events. So looking forward to it, especially Oz Open around Vic and Kingston Heath, and just the atmosphere that I'm sure is going to surround that event this year. Golf fans have been craving, you know,
definitely
tournament golf. Tournament golf at that level, I think it's going to be a cracking couple of weeks. So really looking forward to it.
Definitely have. As we wrap up, just congratulations to another client of yours and friend of the podcast, both My Love Golf and the Mental Mastery, Keely Marks, crowned the PGA of Australia's Victorian Women's Amateur Golfer of the Year. Another significant step. She's a great golfer, a great girl, and deserves all the credit.
Yeah, no, it's a very deserving accolade that Keel's got there, and she is excited. She's obviously committed to Iowa State for the next 4 years, which is great. And I had Kai Comulain and a young Queensland boy that I've been working with for a couple of years. He's just committed to the University of Tennessee, I think, for 2024. But some great things there from the younger crew, and look, exciting. You know, they're both going to try and qualify for the Aussie Open, I believe, and they've got sort of pretty hectic schedules themselves. And I think Kai might be a future guest on the podcast once this schooling year finishes up. We'll definitely get him on. He's a great young kid and a great golfer.
He's a jet. Schooling year. It's crazy to think that these young athletes are finishing up high school. You know, Keely's got, you know, the VCE to finish, and to think that she's put in all these wonderful performances and maintains a very strong ethic towards her scholastic output is great. Yeah. It's great for the University of Iowa, because I know, you know, you don't go just and play golf and not have to do the work scholastically as well. So, you know, they've got a great recruit there.
Yeah, it's great.
Mate, anything else that we need to catch up with?
No, I think that's great. I mean, I'd like to at some stage play a bit more golf. I've still only played one round of golf for the entire year, which is horrible, I know, but Yeah, so there's nothing to report. Obviously, the only thing to report is I still haven't had a hole in one, and I still continue to get messages and being tagged in multiple posts on social media of everyone else in the world having a hole in one. So it's good that people are still looking out for me.
You're the WWW of hole in ones, the worldwide whipping boy.
Yeah. It's continuing to gain momentum, and you've got to have a laugh at it, so it's good.
I love the fact that people you've never met, never spoken to, haven't bumped into, just tag you. It's great.
I think it's great as well. But look, it is good fun.
Hey, I don't do that anymore. So many times I've thought about it, but
I put it in my bank of motivation. I just need to try and find some more time to go out and play. But hopefully this summer I'll be able to get out and play a little bit more. But I know you've been busy as well. So fingers crossed we'll get another game in soon. But hope everyone is well and enjoying their golf. And hopefully the summer of golf here in Australia coming up and the weather improves and everyone can get out there and enjoy it a bit more.
Well, thanks for joining us, everyone. It's been great to catch back up with you. As I've suggested a number of times, please feel free to go to mentalmastery.com.au and you can check out all of the material I have over there. It's a great site. And as I said, for a price of a golf lesson, you know, you can get access to coaching via video from Jamie there. Jamie, we'll see you soon. And
thanks, Roscoe.
Get back out on the golf course, son. Get back out there.
Yeah, I'll try.
All right, mate. Thank you. See you later.
Thanks.
Thanks for joining us on the Mental Mastery Golf Podcast. It's been a pleasure to have you. If you want to bridge the gap between potential and performance and start to build your own unbreakable mental game today, join us over at mentalmastery.com.au at the Mental Mastery Clubhouse, where we would love to connect with you and see you on the inside of the clubhouse where we can continue the mental performance journey. It's been a pleasure having you. See you next time.